Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Many years ago in my practice, I was seeing a couple who were in the process of divorcing. Everything seemed quite amicable. They even invited me into their home as they went through to divide up furniture and belongings. It was going quite well. And then there was one ashtray. The ashtray was given to her by his mother, who is now deceased. He wanted it, she wanted it, and $50,000 in attorney fee and court fees later, they had their divorce, and they had their rage and righteous indignation. And I'll bet today neither one of them remembers who got the ashtray. The divorce process is often adversarial, costly, and emotionally draining. But my guests today say that it just doesn't have to be that way. They're advocates of collaborative divorce, which is designed to help lessen the hurt and lead families through the tumultuous time respectfully and mindfully without going to court. Dr. Sanford Portnoy and Bruce Matez are both actively involved in this process. Dr. Portnoy is the director of the Center for the Study of Psychology and Divorce at the Massachusetts School of Professional Psychology, where he's also on the doctoral faculty. He's in clinical practice up there in Massachusetts, where he specializes in marital therapy, separation, and divorce. He joins us by phone. Welcome. Welcome, Dr. Portnoy.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I'm here in the studio with Bruce Matez. He's an attorney for the South Jersey Collaborative Law Group. He's a member of the firm Borger, Jones, Matez, and Keeley Kane, and he joins me here in the studio. Bruce, welcome.
Thank you, Dan. Nice to be here.
And our phone number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Are you in the early stages of divorce proceedings, or are you in the middle of it? Have you been through a divorce that was unnecessarily painful? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Sandy, I want to follow up on my introduction about my couple. So people argue about money and visitation, but the issues go much deeper. What are people really fighting about?
Fighting about all sorts of things, Dan, and the example you gave is a great example because most often, or a lot of the time, people are not aware of what it is that they're really fighting about, which are things like feelings of abandonment and the hurt over the divorce and rejection and things like that. So, it ends up that during the divorce, the traditional divorce process, the more adversarial process, there are only a couple of things that you really fight about legally, either the money or the kids. So that's what people end up fighting about in one way or another, or the possessions, like the ashtray in the example you gave. But part of the difference in the collaborative approach is that we anticipate, we expect emotionality to be a large part of the process and for people to not always be aware of what it is that's getting in their way during a divorce, and so we dedicate ourselves to helping them try to figure that out and to move beyond it. By actual research studies, word frequency studies, up to 50% of what people talk about with their lawyers during a traditional divorce is about the client's psychological and emotional well-being, not about anything legal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of researchers think that 80% is a more accurate figure.
Wow. I am curious, Bruce. I mean, divorce is agony, and I have no idea how it got into the court system in the first place. Logically, it makes no sense at all. God knows judges don't want to be involved with this. They're not experts.
Well, Dan, I think that's one of the problems with the system right now. Historically, it got into the legal system because there was no alternative. And if you look at what couples are facing in terms of divorcing, they're not really legal problems other than the fact that they need to dissolve the marriage legally. But they're looking at custody and parenting time and support issues and distribution of assets, which are really personal problems that they have to take their life as a married couple and separate it out into two separate lives, but still, especially if they have children, somehow live together in a not a physical way, but live their lives together and still raise their children together and still support their family on the same or maybe a little bit more income than they had. You just hit on the crux of the problem. These are really not legal issues. Society has made them legal issues. They're really personal issues that the people have to figure out how to get through.
Hmm. So, Bruce, when somebody comes to you wanting you to represent them, we'll get into collaborative divorce in a minute, what do they really want?
Well, I think most people want fairness. Of course, everybody has their own opinion of what's fair.
Fairness according to me.
Exactly. One of the areas I think that Sandy maybe missed a little bit of that people are going through in their divorce is control. People want control over their lives. They want control over the decisions that are being made. And yet, in our system, they are more than willing to acquiesce, give that control over to a judge. And oftentimes, they also give the control over to their attorneys. Most of the time, I think people don't really know what they want. They come in and they ask us what they should want.
Well, you know, that really is the issue with divorce. And I'm going to follow up with you, Sandy, that is the issue. They want control. There's nothing that makes you feel more out of control more than divorce. And, you know, when I was going through my divorce, I'm grasping at assets was about trying to get a sense of reclaiming control over my life. The problem is, in the adversarial process, you're way out of control at that point. Yes, Sandy?
Well, picking up on something that Bruce mentioned, in the adversarial process, typically you give over control of the conversation to your attorney.
Yeah.
And in those cases, the attorneys really don't want the parties talking to each other. So to begin with, you're operating in a system that you don't understand. It's a foreign land. It has its own language. It's a very baffling and confusing place to be within the court system. And, in fact, it pretty much everything feels out of control.
Mm. Let's, Sandy, while we have you on the phone, and I'm sorry to hear that you caught this bad cold this morning. Now, I'm sure all of our listeners feel great compassion for you.
Timing is everything.
So, tell us about what collaborative divorce is.
In collaborative divorce, the divorcing individuals and their lawyers, and the mental health professional who, in many, many cases, serves as a coach facilitator of the process. Everyone agrees by written contract that neither of the parties will go to court during the process, but that they will work to collaboratively arrive at a settled agreement. And at that point, of course, they need to go to court to get the judge to bless the agreement. But prior to that, everyone agrees that most of that, or all of that conversation really will take place in the context of meetings with the two individuals, their lawyers, and the mental health professional facilitator, and work out all the details in those meetings. And then the individuals, of course, will meet with their own lawyers during the process as well, because the lawyers are there to advocate for them.
All the
parties are committed to doing it in an open, transparent way, and to facilitating a truly meaningful conversation between the divorcing individuals to give that conversation back to them, apropos of the earlier comments about control. In the event that either party does decide to go to court for any reason during the process, all of the professionals resign from the case. That's part of the original agreement, and the couple has to start over.
Bruce, now this is very different from mediation.
Yes.
How so?
Well, in mediation, typically the parties meet with the mediator by themselves without attorneys. Oftentimes they'll have an attorney who they are consulting with or on the side outside of the mediation process. But the mediator controls the process with the parties through the mediation. In collaborative divorce, as Sandy said, the parties hire lawyers, and the lawyers are right there with them at every meeting, at every step in the of the way. And the parties and the attorneys really control the process together. They work on each problem, each issue, and work towards a resolution through a series of meetings. We call them four-way meetings if it's just the parties and their attorneys. There could be five people in the room if they hire some professionals, or six. Sometimes there could be even more. I think Sandy told me he was in a few that there were as many as eight people in the room in these meetings. But it's very different in the fact that in mediation, there can be some litigation going on at the same time. It's a little unusual, but sometimes that happens. Sometimes people get into mediation after they've already litigated some of the issues. In New Jersey, we have a program where they have to mediate take one shot at mediation before they finish, before they get to trial, at the very tail end of the litigation. So there's all different types of mediation that go on. But this is really a different kind of a process, because there's no mediator involved. It's open negotiations between the parties and their attorneys, all sitting together.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about an alternative to this adversarial divorce that no one seems to like very much. It's called collaborative divorce. So if you've got a question, comment, more important, if you've got experience with either collaborative divorce, mediation, or in hindsight, wishing that you had, give us a call. We've got a couple of lines open. We're at 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Let's go right to the phones. We've got Catherine on the line. Hi, Catherine. You're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Gottlieb. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
This subject has resonance with me. I've been divorced in New Jersey here for about 10 years, I would say. And I guess we had sort of a hybrid of a collaborative divorce. My ex-husband and I decided that we didn't want to give a lot of our money to attorneys and wanted to use it for our three sons. And so we went to see an attorney that we both selected, and we drew up a financial settlement that we both agreed to, and that was that. Now, having said that, you know, there were some times that were a little fraught with anger, et cetera. I think that's hard to avoid, but we have made a very conscientious effort over the years to co-parent and keep some of that adversarial relationship out of our lives, and I think it has had huge benefit for our kids.
No question. It's funny, when you go through a divorce, you learn great lessons about what it really means to love your children and how to get out of the way.
Well, and I think, you know, a lot is being said about what happens at the very beginning of divorce, but I think what people need to remember is, obviously, with children involved, is that goes on and on and on, and that there will always be moments, weddings, birth of grandchildren, college graduations, where you have to behave as a family. And the less of that anger and resentment that you can keep out of the early stages, I think the greater your chances of you know, having healthy, happy relationships all the way across the board become.
Well, well said. Thanks so much for your call. And
thank you for the show.
Glad it went so smoothly. Sandy, though, that's got to be what we heard from Catherine. That's got to be the exception.
It is. It sounds like they did an admirable job. She made some very excellent points about sort of the degree to which they were, I think, able to do that, because it sounds as though they really had a commitment to their children. And the fact is that divorce doesn't end families. It merely reconstitutes them. And so being able to, in a planful way, think about and talk about what you want your post-divorce family to look like for the benefit of the children is really important.
Hmm. That long-term image. Yeah, we usually don't think like that when emotions are ratcheted up.
Well, in fact, there is a relationship between emotions and thinking, such that when emotions or really any type of physiological arousal becomes intense enough, it actually has a negative impact on the ability to be rational.
Sure.
And to use thoughts as well as one might when they're feeling calmer.
Well, big emotions, we're in fight or flight mode.
Yeah. So people, very often people who are caught in the emotional aspects of divorce are quite literally not capable of being rational.
In a traditional divorce, speaking of big emotions, Sandy, these big emotions are inevitable, but the process itself, the adversarial process, seems to escalate them. So in collaborative divorce, you touched on this a few minutes ago, so what's done with all the anger and the fear and the righteous indignation? What happens to those big emotions?
Well, we try to deal with them. We expect them. We talk about them at five-way meetings. When we begin a case, I meet individually with each of the parties, and then and they will have met with their lawyers at that point. And in those initial meetings, I always ask the same set of questions of both individuals. I ask them to state their goals, both for the process and the outcome of the process. I ask them to talk about what issues during the process of divorce they think will be most difficult for them. In other words, what are their hot buttons? What will their spouse say or do during meetings that are likely to push those buttons? Hmm. How will they respond when those buttons get pushed? And then we then talk about some of the things that your last caller brought up about what they want the post-divorce family to look like, what their concerns are about the children, what sort of a shared parenting plan they think they would like and is realistic for them. And then I will talk to the lawyers about about that in the very first five-way. Where it is the two clients, the lawyers, and myself, we will talk about those things. We will talk about the goals. We will talk about the hot buttons. And we will come back to those again and again during the process as needed.
I want to ask you both this before we go to our break. Everybody needs very specific training here. All of them, the mental health professionals, the attorneys, everybody needs training. What kind of training do they get? Sandy?
The training that is typically available in the collaborative process consists of an introductory training that is either 2 or 3 days in length. Now, that's a training for all of the professionals who might be involved in a collaborative divorce. So there's parts of it. The training is meant for attorneys, for mental health professionals, and even for financial professionals who may become involved as neutrals during the process. It really isn't sufficient for what is needed. One of the things that I'm trying to do at the program that I run at the Mass School of Professional Psychology is to develop a 30-hour certificate institute-type training for divorce coaches, because it is important for them to understand the legal process, the psychology of divorce, and a lot of things that psychologists and lawyers alike are not typically trained for.
Bruce, what kind of training did you get?
I took a 2-day training on collaborative divorce, a beginner training course, and then I took a 1-day intermediate training. But in addition to that, most of the collaborative law groups that are forming, at least in the New Jersey and Pennsylvania area that I know of, are also requiring members to have participated in a 40-hour mediation training program, because there are so many similarities between mediation and collaborative divorce. Just having an understanding of the dynamics of mediation is very helpful in the collaborative process. Mm. I agree with Sandy. There's really no, right now, there is no specific guidelines or obligations of attorneys in particular, or the other professionals, for training. But if you want to participate in one of the groups, such as our group, which is a number of lawyers and some other professionals, each group has its own rules, bylaws, which require a certain type of training to be a member of the group.
Hmm. We've got to take a short break. We are exploring alternatives today to this adversarial process that usually involves so much pain and anger and so much expense. We're talking about collaborative divorce with Dr. Stanford Portnoy and Bruce Matez. Portnoy is the director of the Center for the Study of Psychology and Divorce at the Massachusetts School of Professional Psychology. Bruce Matez is an attorney for the South Jersey Collaborative Law Group, and he's also a member of the firm Borger Jones Matez Keeley Kane. Our number is 888-477-9499. How was your divorce? We'd like to hear what you went through and what could have improved the process. 888-477-9499. And those of you who are been on hold, we'll get to you right after we take this break. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
Do you have love, time, or resources to help one child? Bethany Christian Services, a national nonprofit adoption agency, envisions a world where every child has a loving family. Since 1944, Bethany has provided adoption and foster care services, licensed in more than 30 states, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. To learn ways to care for vulnerable children in our region and around the world, 800-215-0702 or bethany.org. Bethany Christian Services supports WHYY.
You're just about to find, put a needle in her arm. That's the way that it goes, that's the way.
On the next Fresh Air, Gillian Welch and David Rawlings are in the studio. Their new album is called The Harrow and the Harvest. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
That it goes.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking about an alternative to this awful adversarial process. That's an editorial comment. We're talking about collaborative divorce with Bruce Matez, who's an attorney for the South Jersey Collaborative Law Group, and Dr. Stanford Portnoy, who's director of the Center for the Study of Psychology and Divorce at the Massachusetts School of Professional Psychology. We've got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. Let's start with Fred. Fred?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Do we have you?
Am I there?
Yeah. We're having some difficulty with our phones, so let's see how this goes.
Okay, well, I'll try to keep it simple and hopefully clear. Is that, you know, after reading, you know, like Stephen Baskerville, taking into custody and living through a lot of these things, it seems to me that the idea of a collaborative divorce is really an affront to the whole divorce machinery. That you would have a lot of people in opposition to this, the bar, mediators, social workers, counselors, all the friends of the court. It seems like they would lose out on a lot of money. So I just wondered what you thought about that and the state of things today.
Well, we have an officer of the court right here, so let's hear what he has to say. Bruce?
Fred, I think that there's a lot of people in the system that would be not in favor of this for exactly the reason that you talked about, financially, and they would for the most part be the attorneys who are in the system. I don't think you'd get any argument from judges, court employees, litigants, social workers, even the experts that we use in our litigation practice. That this is a wonderful system and a wonderful way for people to resolve their issues in their divorce without litigating through the court system. I can tell you from the colleagues that I have who've been doing this for a long time, the attorneys who've been doing this for a long time, have told me that once they get to the point where they can do it on a full-time basis, they are making more money than they were as practicing litigation attorneys, and they have far less receivables. So those attorneys are very much in favor of moving the practice in this type of direction. There are so many problems with the system right now most attorneys would agree that the system is not working now. So in looking for alternatives to litigation, this seems to be the best alternative.
How much is it?
For a collaborative divorce?
Yeah.
The answer to that question is as difficult to answer as how much does it cost to get divorced in litigation. But I believe that if you handle a collaborative divorce properly, it will cost you easily half what it might cost you if you litigate through the system. The collaborative divorce process is built to help people use their money wisely, instead of in an adversarial situation. So instead of having dueling experts in terms of custody and parenting time issues, perhaps they would hire one person to work with the couple together. Same thing if you have to have a business valued or some other assets appraised. Instead of hiring two dueling experts, you'd hire one and everybody would work together with that one. So it should be a cost-saving process for everybody.
Hmm. Yeah, the figures I've seen, Bruce actually suggested it. Collaborative divorce is more like a third the cost of at least a fully litigated divorce. I wanted to just chime in with regard to the caller's question too, because the other side of the coin, from what he asks about lawyers losing out on the income, is that most of the lawyers, or all lawyers really, who come into the collaborative movement do so because they don't want to litigate anymore. And they don't want to litigate anymore because, as lucrative as it may be, it is just very emotionally and psychologically destructive to the lawyers, as well as to the individuals who go through it. I have been invited to present at two conferences, the focus of which was the difficulty of being a lawyer. And nobody's got it worse than divorce lawyers in terms of the amount of stress. One of my doctoral students, in her dissertation, interviewed lawyers, family lawyers, and judges, and 91% of her subjects
indicated that they had gone into family law because they wanted to be able to help people. And fully a third of them, at the time that they were interviewed, were thinking about leaving the field.
Because
so the collaborative divorce really presents an alternative way to practice.
It really
for lawyers that can be just mind-saving.
It really has to take something out of you to watch children being harmed. I mean, that's
true of judges, too, by the way.
Yes.
There's research that indicates that among the major stressors that judges experience is having to make decisions that will involve the future lives of the people who they're deciding about. And in the case of a divorce, they're just making decisions that will affect the future lives of these children who are invisible to the process. Mm.
So, Bruce, how many times have you picked up the phone and on the other end heard somebody saying, "Hi, Bruce, I want a collaborative divorce"?
Well, in South Jersey, we're just getting started in this process. It's been going on in other parts of the state, in Pennsylvania, in the Philadelphia area, and other states for quite some time. I currently have two that are in the process.
Do you recommend collaborative divorce?
Absolutely. I would recommend it. Now, obviously, there's some situations where it's not a viable alternative. Clearly, if there's some domestic violence issues, it's not a viable alternative. Both of the parties have to really be invested in the process in order to participate in it. By the way, I just wanted to make one comment about things that Fred mentioned in his call. He illustrates one of the major problems with our system, and that is that the system is about the litigants and their family, not about the lawyers. And when the lawyers are imposing the fact that they need to make money or their opinions or their ideals or their values into a case, they're wreaking havoc on those people's lives, and quite frankly, maybe, you know, wreaking havoc on generations of lives as a result.
Out of their own financial insecurity or whatever other kind of insecurity.
Right, whatever motivates them. Yes.
Let's go back to the lines. We've got John on the line. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Dr. Dan. Yes, I was supposed to do a pro se divorce last year with my ex-wife, and we actually never really went through it because she wound up hiring an attorney, and I wound up representing myself in the divorce, but which in and of itself is pretty terrible, but the worst part about it was I haven't spoken to my children since January. She basically ostracized me from the preceding March leading up to the July divorce and took the children along the way. They're middle, early teens now, and they just refuse to speak to me. And I remember a few weeks back you did a show on the effects of just ostracizing someone, and it's pretty rough when, you know, the people that you love the most in the world are ostracizing you. I mean, I'm completely isolated and cut off from any sort of information as to what goes on in my kid's life.
Sandy, I'd like to hear you respond to John.
Sure. Let me respond not to John's case in particular, but to more generally. Within 2 years after a divorce has been completed, 20-25% of children in this country no longer have their fathers in their lives. They don't see them at all. Now, there are a lot of reasons for that. Sometimes it's about, you know, a dispute about the child support payments and around that. Sometimes it is that people just get burned out by the conflict and want nothing to do with the ex-spouse anymore. But it's a horrible situation for the children. And when you interview those children as, you know, later in their adolescences or as young adults, what they talk about is having felt that their childhoods were curtailed,
the pain of losing one of their parents, the fact that they were, that no one asked them in the process what their choices were, that they wanted to have contact with the other parent, that they think about themselves as children of divorce, and that they see their lives, they see their parents' divorce as the single most important lens through which they view their lives. So we're talking about long-term and potentially devastating effects.
So if you were in John's position, what would you do?
Well, I don't really know the particulars of why John is in the position he's in, so it'd be a little bit hard to answer, but certainly there would be, one would want to do everything one could to bring them back together. As John presents it, it's a question of his sort of having been forced out of the picture, and so in those cases, there are reconciliation interventions that can be brought into play.
For example, what do you mean?
Well, actually, there are a couple of psychologists who up here in the Massachusetts area, but who have national reputations as well, who run a reconciliation camp in New Hampshire each summer for families where one of the parents has become alienated from the children. And the families are brought together and worked with over a period of a couple of weeks, I think it is, in the camp, first to get the parents to be able to talk to each other and to work with the conflict, and then to bring the children back into the picture as well.
John, I am so very sorry to hear what you're going through. It's agony for you and for the children, and it's just heartbreaking. One of my mantras always in divorce is that you have to love your children more than you hate your ex, and if you can't do that, the children are going to be harmed. I am sorry, John, and I do wish you the best, and I do hope you reconciliation sooner rather than later. We are talking about an alternative to the adversarial process of divorce today on Voices in the Family. We're talking about collaborative divorce, where both attorneys and a mental health professional are brought together in the same room and working together, collaborating to change the structure of this family in a way that's both respectful and mindful and caring all at the same time. Collaborative divorce. My guests are Dr. Stanford Portnoy and Bruce Matez. Portnoy is director of the Center for the School of Psychology and Divorce at the Massachusetts School of Professional Psychology. Matez is an attorney for the South Jersey Collaborative Law Group. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY FM.
Einstein Healthcare Network supports WHYY. For people who suffer from chronic pain and aren't able to participate in daily activities, the Einstein Pain Institute offers specialized care in pain management. Through clinical trials, experience, and commitment to quality, Einstein addresses complex issues both to manage and relieve pain. Einstein uses a team approach to create a customized plan to meet individual needs. Einstein Healthcare Network. For more information or for an appointment, 1-800-EINSTEIN.
As South Africa's former president Nelson Mandela celebrates his 93rd birthday, a new book of original quotations is just out to celebrate his life and work.
Never again shall it be that this beautiful love will again experience the oppression one by another.
We'll hear about Nelson Mandela by himself next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about collaborative divorce with Bruce Matez and Dr. Stanford Portnoy. Matez is an attorney for the South Jersey Collaborative Law Group. Portnoy is director of the Center for the Study of Psychology and Divorce at the Massachusetts School of Professional Psychology. Gentlemen, let's go right to the phones. We've got Chad on the line. Chad, hi, you're on the air.
All right, thank you. I just found out like 2 days ago, my wife wants a divorce. We've been married a couple, almost 3 years. It's certainly not mutual, but we don't have significant assets. I mean, we have some cash in the bank, but we're underwater on a house. By the time we get rid of the house, which neither of us want, there's not going to be a lot of anything left to fight over. So far, everything's been relatively amicable. So, are we a candidate for this kind of thing, or would we just be better off going to mediation or something else?
Maybe even less, Bruce.
Yeah, I would probably say the smart move there would be to start with mediation. It will be a less expensive process, and especially if you're still on good terms and there are not a lot of issues to work out, and there's not a lot of specifically the exchange of documentation. But certainly, if you're on the same page in terms of it's going to happen, and you want to do it in a mutually respectful manner, a collaborative divorce is a viable alternative to you.
Okay. I am sorry to hear that news that you certainly did not welcome, Chad. Let's stick with the phones here. We've got Gary on the line.
Hey, hi, Dr. Dan.
Sure. Hi, Gary.
I cannot tell you how enthusiastic I am to hear this discussion, because 15 years ago I went through this process, but it didn't have a name. My wife and I were going to see a therapist. We started to save our marriage, and we started together with the therapist. And that after a while, things started coming up, so we went to the therapist individually to see if we could resolve our issues. And after a long road, including physical separation, the therapist decided, well, it's time. But she decided that we would have a single lawyer, and that lawyer would meet with us at the clinic, and we would work through our divorce. In other words, selling our house, liquidating, deciding what goes where. And we did. And that process of that non-adversarial process, and I can tell you, my wife had no love for me, and I for her in the start of our this whole thing. That process was so healing. We went through the whole thing. The lawyer acted much as a mediator, more like a mediator. It was civil, and it was the watching each other, each of us toward the other, not going for the throat, not being vindictive, which is what we were afraid of if we had separate lawyers, because we see the mask of the lawyer, we don't see the person. That process, we got down to signing the dotted line on the divorce papers, and we decided, no, we're actually friends. That was 15 years ago. We're celebrating our 41st wedding anniversary this week. So this is quite an interesting thing to happen.
It's a wonderful story. So what you're saying, basically, is that you've had a long marriage and that you screwed up your divorce.
I don't know what you mean by that.
You tried to do it, and you just screwed it up.
That's right. But I guess what I'm saying is, because we were guided through this process, you know, divorce in a way, it's all those, that roiling of issues and hatreds, and it's almost impossible to do it. It's impossible to do it face to face. You need help to do this, and we got that help, and that help was so. It was the divorce process itself that was as much that completed the therapy as the therapist herself. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, because absolutely. Sometimes you have to go away before you can come back.
Right.
And that's what you did together.
Yes, we did. And we saw that, you know, as again, I think it was the wonderful thing of saying, this was an opportunity for each of us to go for the other's throat. And I saw, I'll speak for myself, I saw my wife not wanting to do that. She wanted to get away from me in the start of this. In fact, I said, could we have some kind of relationship And her statement to me in a high-volume voice was, relationship, relationship, I don't even want to know you. That was the beginning of this whole process. In the end, today, we are the best of friends. I don't think our marriage was ever as good as it is today, and I thank that process for it. I thank the therapist for it.
Hmm. That's a wonderful story. Thanks so much for calling in. And Mazel Tov, by the way. Should we all screw something up like that and have such a wonderful outcome? Sandy, I would imagine that's not your typical outcome for collaborative.
It's not a typical outcome, though there have been cases where, in fact, the individuals do reconcile as they begin to hash out some of the problems during the divorce. They begin to hash out some of the disagreements that were there in the marriage as well. There are a number of other cases, though, where the couple does go on to complete the divorce, but where doing it in the collaborative way really has a healing component to it. And so the divorce is completed, but leaves the individuals feeling okay about the way they did it, feeling as though they are a family going forward and that they will continue to raise their children together. It leaves those families divorced but intact in a different way.
One of the things we've touched on a few times is the children, but I want to talk about that directly. How are they involved in this process? How are they helped by the process? Bruce, I'll turn to you.
In many cases where there's a child or children involved, we will retain child specialists to work with the children and with the parents.
Who are also trained in this.
Absolutely. Trained social workers, psychologists, who have some experience in dealing with children, who will work with everybody to help smooth the transition from a family life to a separated family life. As Sandy was talking about before, redefining the family for the children on their terms. And of course, I think all of us agree that there can't be enough said about two parents who show mutual respect and caring for each other. They may not like each other. They may not want to talk to each other. They certainly don't want to live together, but they can still co-parent in a mutually respectful and caring way for their children.
And Sandy, it seems to me that in many cases, good, loving parents all of a sudden forget how to be parents in the middle of this process. What do they need to have happen for them to retrain them on how to parent?
They need to sit with someone who will help them understand the process they're going through with regard to their parenting. People who are going through divorce are threatened with a loss of parenting. In fact, you know, they do end up having their children in their lives less. And so having the opportunity to sit down with someone and to sit down with the two individuals together and work out a shared parenting arrangement that has each parent actively involved in the day-to-day lives of their children can be a very, very reassuring thing for the parents. And really, people do a wonderful job. I mean, I do a lot of parenting plans with the couples who are going through the collaborative process. And so they have the opportunity to plan what that future should look like and how you will speak to your children together and what events you will attend together and so on and so forth.
I wondered about the prognosis, not for the families, but for this process itself, about it catching on. I see one of our callers who we're not going to have a chance to bring on the show says this option should be offered by the courts. Bruce, could that happen? Do you see that ever happening?
I believe it will. I think it's going to take quite some time. Right now in New Jersey, when a lawyer speaks to a client for the first time in an initial consultation, that lawyer has an affirmative obligation to discuss alternatives to litigation with every client. And in fact, when you file a complaint for divorce in New Jersey, you and the client have to certify that there was a discussion about alternatives. Because I'm trained in collaborative divorce, I now speak to my clients about all of the alternatives, including collaborative divorce, because I can offer it to them.
Hmm. And Sandy, what do you see as the future of collaborative divorce? Do you see it becoming mainstream, and what will it take to make that happen?
I hope it will be. Right now, it is practiced unevenly across the country, and by the way, in about 30 other countries as well. But it is such a young and just developing process. So there are certain areas here in Massachusetts. We have it developed to the point where we have a full set of protocols for how it should be conducted. In Texas, in California, in the D.C. area, there are some places where it's very, very active, very developed, and very much in use. And other places, as Bruce spoke about, down where he is, where it's in its infancy and just beginning. I would hope that it would become very mainstream. The American Bar Association has accepted it as a viable form of divorce. So hopefully it continues to spread.
Here's hoping, and I want to thank both of you so much for joining us. It's been a really important and instructive show.
Well, thank you for having us.
And I hope you feel better, Sandy.
Thank you.
Sandy Portnoy is director of the Center for the Study of Psychology and Divorce at the Massachusetts School of Professional Psychology, where he's also on the doctoral faculty. Bruce Matez is an attorney for the South Jersey Collaborative Law Group and a member of the firm Borger, Jones, Matez, and Keeley Kane. Well, next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to go from divorce to fear of intimacy, what it really means to open one's heart in a relationship. Well, if you got questions or comments, we are at voices@whyy.org. And, of course, you can always reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer. Our interns are Emily Haas and Evan Pliss. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, the host. Enjoy your week, my friend.
Tell me more.